Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is November 19th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. I know it was a way for, yesterday. I know I sometimes do a week ahead segment on Sunday. I told you I would not be available for that. I wasn't certain if I would be on Monday night. I was not, but I did tell you I was hoping to be back on Tuesday, so here we are. Impeachment hearings, day number 3, and no deal. At least that appears how it's looking when it comes to U.S.-China trade talks. Now, of course, we're not surprised here at the Capital News. You shouldn't be, especially if you've been with this podcast for a while. All of this talk of grandeur and the best deal ever, regardless of whether it's phase one, phase one and three quarters, phase 25 and a half, it makes no difference. It'll be the best thing ever. We were told just about a month ago that there was a phase one trade deal, and all there needed to be was a signing ceremony, which should have taken place if everything stayed on schedule a couple of days ago. President Xi of China and President Trump were supposed to meet in Chile a couple days ago and sign this thing. Of course, that didn't happen because of the riots and protests taking place in Chile. Is that a coincidence? Or is this just simply, you know, a continuation of a lot of the global protests that are taking place? Because was there really a deal ready to be signed? Remember the piece of paper that Donald Trump held up in the Oval Office when Vice Premier Li He of China was sitting there saying, oh, you know, you guys are tough negotiators, but we finally got you on a phase one. It's the best thing ever. Farmers got to go out and buy more John Deere tractors, and they're going to have to buy, they're going to have to produce so many soybeans, they're going to have to start knocking down forests to start planting more crops. Of course, a bunch of nonsense, and we told you we don't think so. And now Donald Trump has been talking about increasing tariffs. Why would he have to talk about this if there's a phase one trade deal and everybody's kumbaya, everybody's happy, beautiful letters back and forth across the Pacific? Doesn't seem to be the case. Doesn't stop Donald Trump from saying it's the best thing ever, but regardless, the tone now seems to be shifting to an increase in tariffs, which are supposed to go up in less than 1 month. Tariffs are supposed to be increased and be included on an additional Chinese goods on December 15th. That's less than 1 month away. And of course, those tariffs were delayed by the tariff man because he was concerned that it might affect holiday shopping here in the U.S. of A., which was sort of a little bit of a head-scratcher, not to us, but it's a head-scratcher from Donald Trump's standpoint of the logic that he is trying to convey and convince people of here in the United States and around the world, but primarily here in the U.S., is that China is paying all of these tariffs. And this is nothing but a boon. This is a great thing for the United States because we're taking in all of this extra revenue from all of these tariffs. But worry not, Americans, you're not paying it. China is paying it. So then why would he be concerned with an increase in tariffs going to affect the holiday season? If it doesn't affect us, if we're not paying for it, then what's the big deal? Of course, he knows the truth. He knows who's paying the tariffs. You are. I am. We are. That's how they work. Can China, you know, can they manipulate their currency a little bit? Sure. So do we. So does everybody else. We're in the midst of a currency war, basically. It's a race to the bottom. When is the race to the bottom ever a good thing? It's not. It's not going to be good this time. It wasn't good last time when they tried it. And it's just a continuation. It's the continuation of the fraudulent, immoral, and unethical monetary policy that has been adopted around this entire globe for the past decade. And they're getting ready to put the pedal to the metal. Although we're told by the president and by Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, that everything's fine. The economy's in a good place. Then why are you calling for emergency monetary measures if you're Donald Trump? And why are you already practicing and putting into place emergency monetary policy if you're the Federal Reserve? Makes no sense whatsoever. Japanese exports fall the most in 3 years, down 9.2% year over year. Japanese imports plunge 14.8% year over year, the sixth straight month of decline. Everything's great, folks. Nothing to see here. This has been going on for months. Yet the markets couldn't care less. They just want that funny money. They just want the juice. They just want that monetary methadone. They just want that crack cocaine. Anything to keep them happy, to dull the pain, pay no attention to the fundamentals, pay no attention to the leading economic indicators that we talk about here all the time. It's just the U.S.-China trade talks, that's all. And once we start selling them more soybeans, everything will go back to normal, whatever normal means. You want to believe that, you're beyond help. Adding a little bit of fuel to this with the trade talks, the United States Congress, both chambers, the House and the Senate, have unanimously passed the Hong Kong Human Rights Act. This is going to cause, I mean, if Donald Trump signs this into law, and even if he doesn't, having unanimous consent from both chambers basically makes this thing veto-proof. So even if Donald Trump does not sign this bill into law, Congress can overrule him if it goes back. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. China has already warned the United States not to pass this thing and for it not to be signed into law, or they will retaliate in kind. We don't know what that means necessarily, but you can imagine it's going to have something to do specifically with the trade war and increase in tariffs. Maybe they'll start to slow down their purchases of U.S. treasuries, which they're already doing. Will they start to sell them off? Yeah, possibly. I don't think they're going to do that, but it's possible that they could go to that route. There's another number of things that they could potentially do. We'll wait and see if and when that happens, and we'll discuss that. But this is a very interesting thing that has happened. Right now, Hong Kong sort of enjoys special trading privileges with the United States, a different status that exists. What this Human Rights Act bill does, it will cause an annual review of what's going on in Hong Kong. China, of course, does not like this, as I said, because they believe that this is meddling in their affairs. That's a fair enough statement, but that doesn't stop the United States from meddling anywhere, for that matter. And other countries do it, too. So, you know, we're not the high horse here. We meddle in other people's elections and their political affairs. Other people do it to us. That's the name of the game, unfortunately. So it's going to be interesting because Donald Trump, again, with the switch of tone that he's talking about increasing tariffs, and with this act being passed unanimously by Congress, now puts the president in a position. How can he not sign this thing? It also gives him a little bit of cover, too. He can say, hey, look, there's human rights issues, which he's never done before. He doesn't come out and say this. Mike Pence has come out and said this, Vice President Mike Pence. But Donald Trump doesn't. He doesn't come out and say this type of stuff. So again, I don't know if that's sort of Donald Trump and Mike Pence playing good cop, bad cop, or something else. Or Donald Trump just doesn't like talking about these types of things, these types of policies. Donald Trump is not somebody who really goes into great detail with policy on any issue. It's vague statements. It's a few words. They're catchy to a lot of people. They might be comedic phrases to a lot of people. But that's about it. That to me, that's not a good thing. Presidents should have a very strong command of the policies and be able to explain their policies to the public at large. I mean, so that's sort of their job. Donald Trump does not really, at least he does not exhibit that skill set. He might in private, although there's a lot of questions on that regard too, but at least publicly, he really does not show a great command of the policies. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. But again, that could potentially give the president cover to say, look, I got to do it. They're not playing ball. There's human rights issues. Hong Kong has been protesting for 6 months. You got the human rights issue with the Uyghurs in China, with the re-education camps, quote unquote. There's a lot of issues going on. They're communists. You know, a whole host of things that is taking place that gives the Donald some cover to say, look, we just got to step back. China's playing hardball. The tariffs are going up. Now, the markets are not expecting this, by the way. The markets for some, well, we know the reason, regardless of it is idiotic, but the markets are not anticipating this. They continue to trade on tweets and Trump's lackeys coming out and telling us everything's fine. It's the short strokes, right? It's the final laps. You know, Larry Kudlow coming out and it's the short strokes. Are you kidding me? Who comes up with this? What does that mean? What? Obviously nothing. Obviously nothing. Donald Trump coming out and saying phase one is almost done. Nothing. Why you continue to believe these people is beyond me. Why the markets continue to do it is beyond me, other than the fact that a lot of this is computer algorithmic trading that scours the internet for headlines, that is following, no doubt about it, Donald Trump's Twitter feed. And if there's anything that looks positive, it hits some keywords in regards to trade, these computers make a trade. There's no emotion. There's no real logic to it. It's just up or down, yes or no. Let's make money. That's what we're programmed to do. We don't care about the rationality of it. Makes no sense whatsoever. But the machines are taking over, so I guess this is what we're going to see. It's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of days, especially if this thing makes it to Donald Trump's desk, which it should. Will he sign it? We will let you know. Speaking of some other human rights issues or just the global protests in general, over the weekend, Iranians started to protest because of an increase, and a sizable increase, in the price of fuel. Now, Iran has been under some serious, serious sanctions by the United States, and of course, some other countries have to comply with this as well. Sanctions, like we have discussed here before, can be viewed, and I think reasonably so, can be viewed as an act of war, because they can be very, very crippling to a country. And what we have placed on the Iranians are extremely crippling, and that's by design. It is an attempt to get some of the Iranians, primarily the Iranian regime, to come to the negotiating table, because obviously Donald Trump withdrew from the Iran deal with our European allies to deal with the Iranian nuclear situation. And now it's this policy of maximum pressure. The United States would not tolerate this, sanctions being placed on this country by any other country or an alliance of countries against us. We would retaliate in kind or even perhaps militarily. But again, the United States likes to meddle in other people's affairs and likes to put these types of sanctions on. I've been saying this for quite a while now, especially since these protests have started to erupt. This is not transitory. This is history in the making. They are spreading. They're all over the world. I believe they will start making their way into the more developed countries. I think we're going to start seeing this in some more developed nations in Asia. I mean, they're already there in Hong Kong, but I think this will spread as well. I think it's going to be in Europe. We've already seen the Yellow Vests. Over the weekend, the Yellow Vests in France celebrated their one-year anniversary. Of course, they have not been protesting for quite a while, but they nevertheless took to the streets to celebrate their one-year anniversary. There are still issues in Europe. There are still things lurking right beneath the surface, and there are things that are now on the surface that are right in front of us that we talk about here on a near daily basis at the Capital News, especially from an economic standpoint, but even politically speaking as well. These things have not subsided. These things have not gone away, and they are not being remedied. In fact, in my opinion, and this is just sort of what the data tells us, a lot of this stuff is getting worse, deeper into negative rate territory. The financial system in Europe is crumbling. It has not been solved. It's only going to get worse. President of the ECB, Christine Lagarde, we did a podcast a week or so ago, jobs versus savings. She has come out and said it's better to have a job than it is to have savings. I mean, why is this our only option? Why is it between jobs and savings? Why can't we have both? And why is it more important to have a job than savings? Don't you work so you can save, so you don't have to work? And in the meantime, you have nothing but terrible demographics from an aging perspective, because more people are going to be put on pension plans in Europe. More people are going to be put on Social Security here in the United States. It's just going to become a bigger and bigger strain. So if you don't have savings, you're really screwed. And you're not going to find jobs, because if you're in a global economic downturn, where are you going to find work? So I told you when I did that podcast, an argument between jobs and savings, you will end up with neither with these people at the helm. Just telling you, I'm trying to do my best. I write letters. People say, write your congressman, write your senator, write your president. I did all three. I'm trying to warn about what the Federal Reserve does, how they operate, why they're such a problem, what other central bankers are doing. I'm trying. I'm a lone voice. You got to help me, because this affects all of us. So the Iranians are protesting. They actually burned down one of their banks over there. Of course, they know the problem. They went straight to the source. Let's go to the banks. They know what's going on over there. The Iranians, the Persians, they've been around for quite a while. Read your history. They know the problem. And they're burning banks down. Of course, the Iranian regime is starting to come down hard on them, but that's to be expected. But these people are getting upset. I mean, they're at their breaking point. I tell you, revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. You know, these countries that we talk about, Chile, Bolivia, Haiti, Egypt, Iran, Lebanon, these countries don't have the luxury of credit cards. They're not lucky like us here in the United States to pay 20% per month, okay? They're not that lucky. But we're lucky to pay 20% a month. And we have a credit card. And we'll just swipe it and we'll just, you know, if something goes up, we'll just swipe it and pay it later and swipe the card and pay it later. They don't have it. They got to reach into their pocket. How much cash do you have in your pocket? So when you have the smallest of increases in the price of fuel, in bus fares, in subway fares, people go ballistic. It's the straw that breaks the camel's back. That's what it's coming down to. It isn't just the fuel hike. It isn't just the bus fare increase. It isn't just the subway fare increase, or whatever the case may be. That's the final straw that broke the camel's back. That's all it is. It's one thing after the other. They want to tell us here in the United States that there's no inflation. There is, you know this. That's exactly what all these people are feeling. It's too much. They can't make ends meet. They're starving. They're done with it. They're not going to tolerate it anymore. It will come here. And because we have all of these types of problems, because you have negative interest rates all over the world, you have a lot of people searching for yield. Well, where are you finding it? A lot of it here in the United States. I don't think it's good yield. I think it's unstable. I think these valuations are out of control. Get this. We have two companies in this country, Microsoft and Apple. Their combined market cap is larger than the entirety of the Russell 2000, the small cap index. We have two companies in this country, Apple and Microsoft, whose combined market cap is bigger than the entire market cap of the German stock market. You heard me correctly. I'm not making this up. Look it up. Did you hear what I said? I've been talking about valuations being out of control for quite a while. How can you even possibly think that that is reasonable, rational, and sustainable? Maybe it is. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong, but I don't think so, because that is crazy. That is ridiculous, because Microsoft and Apple, they're both trillion-dollar companies by market cap. How big is that? I mean, this is ridiculous. Where are we at here for some perspective? I mean, let's see where they fall here. They're larger than the Netherlands. They're larger than Saudi Arabia. They're larger than Turkey, Switzerland, Taiwan. I mean, they're one of the largest. If they were a country, they'd be one of the largest countries in the world. 2 trillion, they'd be the size of Italy. Two companies combined would be the size of Italy's GDP. If you think that's sustainable, knock yourself out and go buy their stocks. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it, but you know, you can do what you want with your money. Do your own research. You know, I was told to buy low, sell high. I mean, these things are making new highs almost on a daily basis. Trillion-dollar market caps, and they're larger combined than the Russell 2000, the entirety of the Russell 2000, and the entirety of the German stock market. And Germany's what, the fourth, fifth largest economy in the world? The fourth largest, I think? You can't make this stuff up. And people want to know where all of the funny money went. Where's all the inflation? There it is. There it is. You remember the dot-com bust in 2000? Lost 80% in 2 years. You want to be there waiting for it? Good luck. Some other geopolitical news that is breaking overnight here. Israel is claiming that they just bombed Iranian and Syrian targets inside of Syria. And the Israelis are claiming that this is a retaliatory act. They are retaliating to bombs being sent their way in Israel. So again, Israel is claiming that they just bombed Iranian and Syrian targets inside of Syria. What could possibly go wrong next? Can't make this stuff up. What else do we have here? We talked about the Hong Kong issue. We talked about the tariffs. Now, the impeachment hearings. We had Jennifer Williams testify today in aid to Mike Pence. We had Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman testify. Those two were together in the morning session. In the afternoon session, we had Ambassador Volker. He was the special envoy to Ukraine. He was the gentleman who resigned almost immediately after his name was outed in the whistleblower complaint. And a national security advisor, or on the team, I should say, not the national security advisor, but somebody on the council, Tim Morrison, testified in the afternoon session. Pretty much a continuation of what we saw from last week's testimony of George Kent, Bill Taylor, and Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch. Really no firsthand witnesses with direct conversations with Donald Trump. Now, Ambassador Volker has had conversations with Donald Trump, although he doesn't have the full story. That's the whole thing, folks, with all of this. Okay, the Republicans want to make the argument that none of these witnesses have true firsthand knowledge, especially the three who testified last week. And that's true. And we talked about this during a couple podcasts last week, impeachment hearings day one and two. They don't have firsthand knowledge. And that's what the Republicans are complaining about. Then why aren't the Republicans calling on President Trump to allow firsthand witnesses to come and testify under oath? If the Republicans are so sure that nothing wrong was done, if Donald Trump is so certain that he did nothing wrong, that the phone call was perfect, that the transcript proves him right, that President Zelensky says there was no problem, etc., etc., then send your boys down, raise their right hand, and let's get this thing over with. Because if you have exculpatory evidence that can just prove without a shadow of a doubt that what the Democrats are currently doing with this impeachment inquiry is a complete hoax, a complete sham, then the American people have the right and they deserve to have this information before them. Because this country is extremely divided. We haven't been at these types of levels since probably the Civil War. I've seen some surveys that are saying right now you have about 80% of Americans, they've already made up their mind when it comes to this impeachment inquiry. 80%. That's how divided we are, because that's saying that people, it doesn't matter what the facts are, it doesn't matter what comes out, at least not at this point, their minds have already been made up. You either despise Donald Trump to such a level, he's already guilty, makes no difference what happens, and you have Republicans who Donald Trump, whatever he says is the truth, he can do no wrong. This is just a hoax by the Democrats like everything else. What do I always say here? Let's wait for the facts. I have been consistent throughout the entirety of my analysis with this impeachment inquiry, the entirety. If you think that's not true, leave me a message. But I have been, as far as I'm concerned, because I've been doing my best, like I do with every topic that we discuss here at the Capitol News, to call balls and strikes as I see it. I told you I don't have a dog in this hunt when it comes to Republicans or Democrats, Trump, Clinton, Obamas, Bushes, makes no difference to me. What I'm interested in is the truth and injustice. I don't care what your name is. I don't care what your title is. Nobody is above the law. And the president cannot hide behind the fact that he thinks that basically being the president of the United States grants him almost absolute authority and absolute power. And the fact that he comes very close to saying that type of thing is actually frightening if you think about it, because that is not what this country was founded on. In fact, that is the antithesis of what this was founded on. Kings and monarchs and queens and monarchs and dictators claim to have absolute rights and absolute authority, not presidents of the United States. So that type of rhetoric actually, you know, it frightens me from that standpoint. He should not be saying that type of thing. He should know better. But again, the witnesses, Jennifer Williams, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, Ambassador Volker, and Tim Morrison today. As far as maybe giving a little bit of aid to Donald Trump today would be Ambassador Volker and Tim Morrison. Not that this exonerates Donald Trump, because I don't think they have enough information to do that. They also, Ambassador Volker in particular, sort of changed his opening statement to make comment that given what he has since learned through other people's testimonies and the depositions that have been released, the transcripts, he is saying, had I known these facts, I would have raised my hand in objection to pretty much talking about the Bidens. So that's not good. And of course, we know that's not good because it looks entirely political. That Donald Trump is concerned with, quote unquote, you know, he's really concerned now, quote unquote, with Ukrainian corruption all of a sudden because Joe Biden is running for president. And there's a corrupt business, a company over there in Ukraine, Burisma. I have no doubt that they're corrupt to some degree. And I'm sure that, it's quite possible that there is some shady dealings that went on with Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. However, you continue to have people come out who are under oath testifying that that story has been debunked, that that was a conspiracy theory that was peddled by Vladimir Putin, that it was the Ukrainians who were involved in the 2016 election, not the Russians. And lo and behold, that's who Donald Trump is now saying was interfering in the 2016 elections, even though all of our intelligence communities have basically said that it was the Russians. Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani still are pushing Ukraine. It's quite possible. I mean, I say all here all the time. It would be no surprise if all of these countries were meddling in our elections. Like I said at the top of this podcast, we meddle in everybody's elections. So it wouldn't be surprising. But what is sort of a little shocking is that Donald Trump almost seems to go out of his way in saying that, you know, Russia really didn't do anything. It's somebody else. It's somebody else. So that's something that sort of be mindful of. And Ambassador Volker came out and said, you know, I know Joe Biden. I've known him for a very long time. He has the highest standards and integrity and this, that, and the other. So that's not boding too well for the Trump and Republican argument that Joe Biden and his son are corrupt as the day is long, because you have these people that continue to come out and sort of defend the character and integrity of Joe Biden. So nobody's coming out and throwing Joe Biden under the bus. Ambassador Volker also claimed that he was a friend and knew John McCain as well. The reason his name came up was because Donald Trump was once again tweeting against witnesses Jennifer Williams and Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. And one of the Democrats was asking questions if that was, you know, appropriate and all of this, that, and the other, attacking, you know, John McCain back in the day when he was alive and when and since he's passed away, and asking Ambassador Volker if he approves of that type of rhetoric from the president. He said he does not. It's inappropriate, this, that, and the other. And for the record, everybody claimed that they are never Trumpers, although Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman claimed he was never partisan, is the way he put it. So a little bit of wiggle room there, but that's how he put it. He is a never partisan. That was his testimony. So it's just a continuation of attack and attack the witnesses. I don't know why Donald Trump continues to do this. This opens the door again for the Democrats to continue to make the argument of witness tampering and or witness intimidation. If you want to go after these people, let's bring people down, raise your right hand and testify. We're interested in the truth. I told you, I don't care who is implicated. I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican, and you shouldn't care either. But as we know, 80% of the country does care, I guess. If you're a Republican, Trump's fine. And if you're a Democrat, he's guilty as hell. There's no in between. You got 20% of the country that is waiting for the facts. I guess I fall in that 20% category. And like I've said here, since we've been conducting this analysis for over a month, given the whistleblower complaint, maybe we're going on 2 months already, we're waiting for the facts. We're doing our best to read some of the transcripts that for the sake of the time in this audience, that I can read in their entirety. We did not go through all of the transcripts of the witnesses who have come and who were deposed, because that was like 4,000 some pages. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to bore you to death. And we're going to hear what transpires. So it's interesting to have all of this information in front of us right now, because I think it's painting a picture, and I continue to agree with my current analysis, that this does not look good for Donald Trump. There are concerns that this is highly political, because what you started to hear today from Ambassador Volker, and Ambassador Volker was one of the transcripts, by the way, that we actually took the time to read a little bit of. And when I say a little bit, I'm talking a handful of pages out of the 300 or 400 that existed. And Ambassador Volker was somewhat in the know that the Ukrainians knew that Rudy Giuliani was running around Ukraine, asking questions, making connections, trying to find out this, that, and the other. But Ambassador Volker didn't know what Rudy Giuliani was doing. And that sort of went to his testimony today, a little bit of a change in again, his opening testimony, his opening statement. If he had known what has transpired, he would have objected. This is what I'm telling you, because the Republicans want to tell you and give you a lot of names of some high-named people. Rick Perry, Mike Pence, a whole host of people that, well, they didn't push Ukraine. They didn't talk about Burisma or the Bidens. They didn't talk about all this other type of stuff that Donald Trump has been talking about. And that goes to my point that Donald Trump is keeping a very tight leash on his inner circle. And what we know so far, that inner circle consists of Rudy Giuliani, Rudy Giuliani's two associates, Lev and Igor, two people who have been arrested by the FBI, by the way, and a politically appointed, or a political appointee, I guess I should say, an ambassador, Gordon Sondland, because he gave the Trump inaugural committee $1 million. So that's his inner circle, his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani's two associates who have been arrested by the FBI, and an ambassador who is not a member of the Foreign Service or the State Department, but somebody who gave Donald Trump's inaugural committee $1 million. And like I've said, this is somewhat par for the course. People give big money. They want something in return. Wow, quid pro quo, huh? Do this, do that. Mm-hmm. And he was awarded the ambassadorship to the European Union. Now, Ambassador Sondland, his portfolio, I guess, can contain Ukraine because Ukraine may want to become a member of the European Union. But he is not the ambassador to the Ukraine. Marie Yovanovitch was the ambassador to Ukraine, and we did that analysis last week, so check that out, impeachment hearings day number two, because she was gone, and her name, or she was referenced at least, in the call transcript between President Trump and President Zelensky, that she's bad news, she's not to be trusted, and that she's going to go through some things. And this was after she was kicked out, because that phone call took place on July 25th. She was gone on May 20th. Of this year. So even after she's gone, Donald Trump is telling another head of state, President Zelensky, that this woman was trouble and that she's going to go through some things. So clearly she's still top of mind for Donald Trump and she's going to go through some things. I don't think that was the best thing that Donald Trump could have said. Better to stick by your team here in the United States and, you know, keep that type of criticism to yourself and to your team here in the U.S. as opposed to sort of the airing of your grievances to another head of state. I just don't think that that was good. Now, that in and of itself doesn't rise to an impeachable offense, not by any measure. I just don't think that that was a smart move by Donald Trump to make that type of statement to a foreign leader. So that was out there. And again, Ambassador Yovanovitch was known for fighting corruption. So this whole thing with the Republicans and Donald Trump now, it was all about corruption. They needed to check out President Zelensky to make sure that he was a straight shooter, that he really was going to be the man that he promised to be as a candidate, that he was going to fight corruption, that he was going to, quote unquote, drain the swamp over there in Ukraine. And we already know from previous testimony, through Ambassador Volker, by the way, that they had this guy vetted a while ago, that it's good to go. Don't hold up this aid. Give it to him. This guy is serious. He is the real deal. He has a mandate from the Ukrainian people. This is what he is going to do. There's no reason to hold up this aid. So it becomes interesting from a corruption standpoint, because here, and I hope you can follow this logic, because what the Republicans are arguing is that Donald Trump was simply waiting for Zelensky to be vetted by Rick Perry, Mike Pence, a whole host of other people, and then he released the aid. Of course, the Democrats counter and say the only reason he released the aid is because he got his hand caught in the cookie jar, because the whistleblower complaint came out and it was made known that there was circulating in Congress, and Donald Trump and company said, uh-oh, got caught doing something, we got to release this aid. So both sides hold water, because I have no doubt that Donald Trump is at least he should be somewhat interested in corruption, especially if we're going to be giving $400 million worth of taxpayer funds to another country that is corrupt. However, my question here, aid was given to Ukraine in 2017 and in 2018. And we know that Ukrainian administration was corrupt because Zelensky became president because he was advocating to fight corruption. So Ukraine, the former Ukrainian administration is corrupt. We know this. Yet in 2017 and in 2018, the aid goes to Ukraine. Was there a vetting committee? Was Donald Trump sending our people over there? Was he sending Rudy Giuliani and Levin Igor and Gordon Sondland over there in 2017 and in 2018 to vet them? Did he send Rick Perry and Mike Pence over there to vet that Ukrainian administration before releasing the aid? I haven't heard anything like that to that effect. Just gave it to him. In 2019, it is released, but we just talked about that timeline. But it was held up. And is it just a coincidence that it was held up in the same year that Joe Biden is a presidential contender on the Democratic side? Is that just a coincidence? Because Burisma was in existence in 2017 and 2018. They were corrupt then. They could still be corrupt today. Hunter Biden was on the board. That was known. Joe Biden being somewhat involved was known. Why didn't Donald Trump go after them then? Why wait until Joe Biden is actually a political rival? It just makes the whole thing smell. It just makes it that much more suspicious. You understand the logic? And furthermore, Donald Trump wants to say that he is against foreign aid in many regards. And he wants other countries to start ponying up some more dough, which I happen to agree with. He also wants to make the argument, this being Donald Trump and the Republicans, that President Obama gave nothing to the Ukrainians. They say, what's the argument? Obama gave blankets, Trump gave missiles. So what do you want to do here? You don't like giving foreign aid. Well, you had the perfect cover to not give them foreign aid because you just could have been continuing the policy of Obama. Because if you're so concerned about giving taxpayer dollars to a corrupt country, then why did you give it to them in 2017 and 2018? If you're so concerned about corruption, because we know that administration was corrupt. And again, we gave it to them in 2019, but with a hold first. Is it because Joe Biden is running for president? Or was it because he was waiting to hear back from a few people that Zelensky was the real deal? Still waiting. Still waiting to see, but I think it's highly suspicious. And I think the fact that he asked a sitting president of Ukraine to investigate his political opponent is somewhat telling. And like I've said from the beginning, that because you're a political opponent does not exempt you from being investigated. So if Democrats want to make that argument, that doesn't hold water. Like I always say, and on the other side too for Donald Trump, even if he shows that the Democrats are guilty of something, it doesn't mean that Donald Trump is therefore innocent. They can both be guilty. Keep that in the back of your mind. Keep that in the back of your mind. They all can be guilty. So the testimony today from these four witnesses, it'll continue to be discussed. Prime time tomorrow, I believe he starts at 9 a.m., is going to be Ambassador Gordon Sondland. He's going to be the first person that really has the inside scoop as to what's going on, I think anyway, because recall, he testified behind closed doors, and he amended his testimony after getting word of what other people were testifying to. And now last week we were talking about that phone call that he had allegedly with Donald Trump in a Ukrainian restaurant that was overheard by staff members of the State Department. saying that Donald Trump was interested in the investigations into the Bidens. Didn't give a damn about corruption and all this, that, and the other about Ukraine. Wants the big stuff. You mean like the war that's going on? No, no. He wants to know about the investigations. Will the Ukrainians and President Zelensky make a public announcement that they are going to investigate Burisma, which by extension would mean perhaps the Bidens? And maybe even come out, like I said, the cherry on top would be if they actually came out and said not only Burisma, but that they are investigating the Bidens and their involvement with Burisma and perhaps other things as well. So Ambassador Sondland, it's going to be very interesting to see because there are perhaps corroborating witnesses that would corroborate the David Holmes, who was the political counselor in Ukraine, who allegedly overheard this phone call between President Trump and Gordon Sondland. So he's claiming that there were other staffers that should have been able to hear this phone call. So if Gordon Sondland comes out and says, no, that phone call never took place, I didn't say this, that, or the other, well, he's going to be arguing against the testimony of David Holmes and perhaps other witnesses that could come forward to corroborate David Holmes. So Ambassador Sondland I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if he is in legal trouble at this point. You are allowed to amend your transcript so that it is more truthful. But now he has to be very careful because who else might be waiting in the wings to say something? And is he going to say, yeah, Donald Trump was just, he was just obsessed with the Bidens in that investigation? Or is he going to say, well, I don't recall, can't remember, I was exaggerating? He could come up with a whole host of things. Will he plead the fifth? That's some speculation that's being circulated out there. But we're going to know soon enough. 9 a.m., I believe he is set to testify Wednesday morning. That is Ambassador Gordon Sondland. I think he's going to be attacked, perhaps by both sides, Democrats and Republicans. It depends on the testimony he gives. If it starts to throw Donald Trump under the bus, well, the Republicans are going to attack him. And if he starts to support Donald Trump, the Democrats are going to attack him and say, whoa, wait a minute now. You amended your transcript. You had this phone call. Somebody else is going to testify to. They're going to pull that the TV lawyer stunt. Were you lying then or were you lying now, Mr. Sondland? That's what it's going to come down to, basically. It is a circus down there, but it doesn't mean that this isn't worthy because I do think the investigation is worth the effort, because if Donald Trump was fascinated more by politics as opposed to policy, that can be an abuse of power, and that is not something that we should want from any politician, especially our president of the United States. So we'll leave it there. Again, the impeachment hearings for day three, people are already reading into it what they will. The biggest testimony, I think, is going to take place tomorrow with Ambassador Gordon Sondland. So we'll have an update on that tomorrow and anything else that might be breaking as well. Thank you so much for joining me. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kuraitis. Godspeed.